Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
Years ago, I'm going to tell a story about Michelle and my wife. She doesn't know this is coming. So, years ago, before we were even dating, she was hanging out with some friends at their house and decided to, they were messing around with a Ouija board. And so they're doing their thing, whatever, and at one point, there was a radio in one part of the room. I'm not making this up. It turned itself on, and the dial went from one end all the way to the other, and they were done with the Ouija board. They were done with that. So this is not a message this morning about the dangers of Ouija boards or dabbling in spiritual occult stuff. I'm going to tell you a story about a party that was interrupted by something terrifying, okay? So we've been in the Daniel series, Strangers in a Strange Land, and the last three of them were done by Pastor Wade, Pastor Mariah, Pastor Claudette. They were all excellent messages. I listen to them because I check on them while I'm away. But the whole series is about informing us, how do we live as followers of Jesus in the 21st century when our culture is either apathetic to that message or even antagonistic towards it. And there's a lot of stuff in the book of Daniel that informs that for us. And today, the message is entitled, The Writing on the Wall. We have our Crosslands Live website. If you go onto that, just type into your phone browser or whatever, smart device, crosslands.live. And there's a relevant scripture for today. There's kind of where do we go from here thoughts. In fact, anything that you want to learn more about announcements or connecting. If you want to sign up to be a kids leader, you go to crosslands.live and you'll find a link there for that. So I do encourage people to do that because the Sunday morning message is like 25 minutes, maybe half an hour, and then it's kind of done. But that gives you kind of where do we go from here? How do I process this on a Monday or a Tuesday? How do we make it part of our daily life? And the second thing is, if we have time today, I will entertain text messages. My number's on the screen. You can text me if you have a comment or a question that's relevant to the message today, then we'll deal with that in the service. So we're looking at Daniel 5. We've done Daniel 1, Daniel 2, Daniel 3, Daniel 4, and this is next. So these are nice, tidy stories encapsulated in individual chapters. This story is the very next one that takes off right after the one that Pastor Claudette preached 2 weeks ago. But it starts off many years later. Many years later, King Belshazzar gave a great feast. Now, it's many years later. So the key king, who was kind of an antagonist, bad guy, but kind of not really. It's kind of not sure what his status is as an opponent in the story. But it was Nebuchadnezzar, and all of a sudden we got a new king. In fact, when you look at history, he's actually a couple of kings removed. In fact, he's actually not even a king. Okay, he would like to see himself as a king, but Nebuchadnezzar was succeeded by his son, and then there was a coup. So somebody else decided, a whole bunch of people decided, they didn't want Nebuchadnezzar's son to be their king. So a man named Nabonidus collaborated with a whole bunch of nobles in the court, and they assassinated the son, and Nabonidus became king. And so Nabonidus, he wanted to do a whole bunch of reforms. And the primary god, the head deity they worshipped in Babylon, although they worshipped a ton, was a god named Marduk. And Nabonidus was not so much of a fan of Marduk. He was a fan of another god called Sin. It's not related. Sounds like Sin, but that's not what it means, okay? So this god's name was Sin. I believe it was a moon god. And so he proceeded to start building temples to Sin all the way through the Babylonian Empire. And so he was traveling away from the city, and while he was away, he put his son in charge. His son's name is Belshazzar. So that's what's going on here. Belshazzar is the son of the king. He's the de facto ruler while his father is away. And this is what makes it really awkward, is when Daniel and his friends, we heard this in the first message, they were exiled from Israel, from Jerusalem, to Babylon, and they were all given new names, and Daniel's new name was Belteshazzar. It means God protect the king. And this new king, this son of the real king, who's kind of a regent, his name is Belshazzar, which means God protect the king. So, I mean, it's one of those things, we have a lot of Johns in our culture, not so many Belshazzars. But in this case, a couple of Belshazzars, just to keep things confusing. But for our benefit anyway, in this story, they never refer to Daniel by his Babylonian name. They only refer to him by his Hebrew name, which is Daniel. which means God is my judge. That would make a great tattoo. So Belshazzar gives a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. So, I mean, it's actually emphasizing his drinking of wine, because basically he is, not only is he new money, because his father was not part of the royal family, so he's the son of the new king, and he's taking all advantage of that to have this big party, by no means do I want to say that all younger people are like this, but some young people have no respect for what's gone on before, and they leverage everything they can for their own benefit. Some, not all. There's a lot of great young people. And he was one of those. Zero respect for what had gone before. And so he's in charge, but all he's doing is having a great big party. He's demonstrating immaturity, deliberate disrespect. Why deliberate disrespect? Because what he does is he takes all of the worship elements that were carted off from the temple in Jerusalem, and he says, we're going to party with these. So there were cups and bowls and all these things that were intended to be used for worship of God, the Hebrew God, and he says, we're going to use them for our party. Now, even Nebuchadnezzar never did that. He took them as a trophy and stored them and displayed them, but he's taking all of these elements and showing huge disrespect to another culture. And it says in verse 4, while they drank from them, they praised their idols made of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. That's a little bit of a slam on them, because the Hebrew perspective is your gods aren't even real gods. You're taking these elements of worship for the true God, and you're desecrating them for the sake of your idols, which are pointless, they're useless. So what happens, verse 5, suddenly they saw the fingers of a human hand writing on the plaster wall of the king's palace near the lampstand. The king himself saw the hand as it wrote, and his face turned pale with fright, his knees knocked together in fear, and his legs gave way beneath him. He's probably like half sloshed out of his mind, and all of he sees this, and the party's over because he's terrified. That's the end of the party. You can imagine like an old West saloon with the piano players tinkling along and everybody's it's all rowdy, and somebody walks in, big black Bart or something like that, and everything gets real quiet. Okay, that's what's going on here. The party's over. It says the king shouted for the enchanters, astrologers, and fortune tellers. Somebody give me an answer. He said to these wise men, whoever can read this writing, he can't even read the writing. He doesn't even know what it says. Whoever can read this writing, he's going to reward them with all this stuff. But all the king's wise men came in, and they couldn't help him. And then it says he became more alarmed. His face became pale. It's like he's like having an aneurysm or something. His nobles, too, were shaken. But when the queen mother heard what was happening, the queen mother is older. She has some institutional memory here. So she says, when the queen mother heard what happened, she hurried to the banquet, and she said, long live the king, don't be so pale and frightened. There is a man in your kingdom who has within him the spirit of the gods. During Nebuchadnezzar's reign, this man was found to have insight, understanding, and wisdom like that of the gods. Your predecessor, King Nebuchadnezzar, made him chief over all the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and fortune tellers of Babylon. Belshazzar hadn't even heard of Daniel. It's been that long. In fact, it reminds me, the very beginning of the chapter, many years later, it's almost like an echo of one of the archetypal Israeli stories from centuries before, when Joseph was the aide to Pharaoh, kind of second in command. And then the book of Exodus starts out, many years later, another Pharaoh came that did not know Joseph or hadn't heard of him. That echo is key here. This is what's going on. So there's this man who is highly respected. And then now he's kind of retired, and the new kid comes along and has no idea who he is, and now he's stuck. So the queen mother recommends him to come in. Verse 12, this man Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar, has exceptional ability and is filled with divine knowledge and understanding. He can interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. So Daniel was brought in before the king. So Belshazzar brings him in, says, I've heard you do this amazing stuff, I need your help, and I'm willing to reward you with kind of whatever you want. I'll even put you up to third in charge in the kingdom. And Daniel says, I don't need your stuff. I don't want your reward. Daniel's old by this point, and he understands the value of possessions compared to knowing what's right and wrong. So Daniel answered the king, verse 17, keep your gifts or give them to somebody else. Sounds almost disrespectful, but I think he doesn't really care at this point. He understands the difference between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar. But I will tell you what the writing means, your majesty. The Most High God gave sovereignty, majesty, glory, and honor to your predecessor Nebuchadnezzar. Was anybody here 2 weeks ago when Pastor Claudette spoke? Great message. Daniel basically tells that message. Your predecessor was arrogant and proud, demonstrated what the Greeks would call hubris, and God took him down about 10 notches until he realized his place in the grand scheme of things. So even as a ruler, God's still way above. So he recounts that story to Belshazzar. And then he says in verse 22, you are his successor, O Belshazzar, and you knew all this, yet you have not humbled yourself. You have proudly defied the Lord of heaven. Now he's not using the name of God here because the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar seems to have come to some understanding that there's a chief God who's not Marduk, which most of the Babylonians would have thought. He calls him the Lord of heaven. He's higher than all the gods. And I've had these cups from his temple brought before you. You and your nobles, your wives and concubines have been drinking wine from them while praising gods of silver, gold, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Again, there's that shot. Your gods are not real gods. Gods that neither see nor hear nor know anything at all. You have not honored the God who gives you the breath of life and controls your destiny. This is risky. You think about it. Could you imagine somebody who is in charge of a nation or empire who's immature? Could you imagine that? I'm not saying anything. I'm talking about Belshazzar. I don't know what you're thinking about. But to stand in his presence, he would have the power of life or death. And this is what he says. He basically he calls him to task for what he's doing. And he says, this is the message that was written. Verse 25, Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. And scholars aren't sure exactly what these words, what language it is. It sounds like Aramaic. It sounds like Hebrew, but those two languages are closely related. And one of the issues is that the languages, as they were written back then, had no vowels. So it's a series of consonants. And you can, the words can be different depending on which vowels you put in. And so this is part of the reason why everybody's confused. So Daniel picks these words that seem to have double meanings. Specifically the last one. Meaning means numbered. God has numbered the days of your reign and has brought it to an end. And that was a word, it sounds an awful like a word in Hebrew that has to do with, with numbering. Tekel was very closely related to the Hebrew word shekel. And shekel was not, today it's a coin. And in Jesus' time it was a coin. It was a unit of money, like a dollar. But before that, it was a weight of money. It was like, you know, when you look at British money, right? It's in pounds. Well, it used to mean pounds. Like a pound was a pound of silver. And so that's what a shekel was. It was a weight of money that later became a value of money. So tekel means weighed. You have been weighed on the balances and have not measured up. Parson means divided. And here's the most obvious double meaning. Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. So the word parson sounds very much like the word Persian, not just in English, but in that language. So here's the dumb thing. So the Babylonians were being threatened at that very moment by the Persian army. You talk about hubris, arrogance, and immaturity. Belshazzar having a party, and the Persian army's on their way. He figures, well, this city is unassailable. And it was supposed to be. It had the massive walls. But his father came into power through a coup. And this was going to happen again. So Daniel is rewarded with all the things he doesn't want, and it says in verse 30, that very night Belshazzar, the Babylonian king, was killed, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. What history tells us, there was not a battle. The Persians walked in, which means that they were let in, because people were fed up with the rule, and the Babylonian Empire in one night came to an end, and the Persians took over. Have you ever seen the movie 300 or know the story of 300? It's the same Persians. They became the next world power without a battle because Belshazzar was too busy having a party. He didn't recognize the writing on the wall. His name means Bel, one of their gods, protect the king. And he was not so protected. Daniel means God is my judge, and God judged Belshazzar. Now, what do we do with this? That's a great little story. What's our challenge? I took a course once on the book of Luke, and a little bit on its chapter 2, which is Acts. And one of the overtones in Luke Acts is that the church is a prophetic community. So Luke, who writes this gospel, describes Jesus quite a few times to set the stage. He describes him as a prophet. And then as he goes on and Jesus begins to gather followers and commission them, he gives that gathering of followers the same characteristics. So a prophet is somebody who speaks for God to his people and to people that are not his people. That's what a prophet does. They speak the words of God. And so this idea in Luke and Acts, and it really comes to fruition in the book of Acts, is that God has commissioned this group of people. The word church was not used. There was a word which meant a whole bunch of people that were called or commissioned. So a group of people that are commissioned. It's a lot more active word than the word church, which is comes from a Norse root that has to do with a building. This is where we get messed up in our culture, because the church is not a building. The church God created has never been a building. There's one or two parts in the Bible where it uses a building metaphor, but it's not the building, it's the people. So this group of people that are called out are intended to be a prophetic community, a community that speaks God's words, much like Daniel spoke God's words. Daniel spoke God's words in a hostile culture that was not his own. We are called to speak God's words in a hostile culture which is not intended to be our final culture. Again, I mentioned in the very first message, there's a difference. The difficulty here is because we all come out of this culture, so we think it's ours. We tend to think it's just the way things are because we're culturally blinded. But prophecy demonstrates or communicates what is versus what could be. So you have to be able to recognize what is in our culture and understand what God intends that could be. And that is good news. It's not God's message to our culture. Some people, I think, get it a little bit wrong. Because throughout the New Testament, the message of God to people outside the church is always good news. There's a little bit of warning that judgment is coming. There's a little bit of warning that God's anger is going to be revealed one day. That's mostly to the church, to outsiders. The biggest weight of the message, it's good news. The good news that Jesus, through his death and resurrection, has been revealed to be the legitimate ruler of the world, and he loves you. If the legitimate ruler of the world was Sauron, we're all in trouble. If the legitimate ruler of the world is Voldemort, we're in trouble, especially us muggles. But if the legitimate ruler of the world is Jesus, that's good news because he loves you. That's the message. Jesus, the crucified and resurrected Lord, is the legitimate ruler of the entire world and you as an individual. When Daniel's preaching in prophesying and speaking God's words in Babylon, he was probably more culturally the same as Babylon than we would be culturally to Babylon or ancient Israel. So their basic values were the same. They both would have been an honor culture, were not. They would have both been more communal than individualistic, were not. A lot of those things would have been the basic values, what people strive for is the same. You know what the primary difference was? The primary difference between the two cultures was the identity and nature of their gods. And the primary difference between us and people that might be in the mall this morning or sleeping in this morning is the identity and nature of our God. So there are people that are stuck, trapped, striving for the trinity of our culture. Power, money, and sex. And there's a whole pantheon of sub-deities. I'm using that as a metaphor. I'm not sure there's actual literal, fake gods or demons or whatever that represent those things. But that's what people strive for. That's what they're trapped by. That's how they define everything. They define everything by those things. But we have a God that rules everything and loves us completely. That's the primary difference. So here are some questions. I can't give you all the answers this morning, but here are some questions for you to chew on. First, where is the writing on the wall in our culture? You know what the writing on the wall means? The message of doom. You know where that expression comes from? I'll give you one guess. Yeah, Daniel 5. That expression comes from that story, and we understand in our culture to mean the message of doom. What are people freaked out by in our culture? And they are, by some things, the environment, politics, whatever. Where are people asking, what does this mean? Where are our opportunities to speak the good news where people are in fear and confused? And here's a little bit of a qualifier, because speaking God's words to people that need hope is very different from sharing our opinions about ice cream flavors or music or economics or politics. Jesus does not ally with the left or the right. He's over them both. Jesus has no investment in communism versus capitalism. He's over them both. And so sometimes we have these conversations with people, and I think sometimes we tend to bring too much of our own opinion in it. So it requires hearing from God and being aware of the opportunities to speak, and they're all around us. And I believe God is always speaking. So here's my challenge for you for this week. Prayerfully make yourself available to hear from God and to watch for opportunities to speak his words. This is something that you're going to walk out of here and forget that I said as soon as you did. So, I'm going to give you a trigger, okay? When you get out of your car, you're going somewhere. So I'm going to try to spark your memory. When you go out of your car, you have an opportunity to hear from God and speak into someone's life. And sometimes he's not going to have an agenda or an assignment for you, but many times he will. We just got to be listening for it. So I'm going to ask that this week, when you get out of your car, you say a quick prayer and ask God, help me recognize what opportunity you have for me right now to speak your words. When Daniel spoke into the court, he had years of good reputation. He had a track record. He had good history. And so one thing we have to be careful is not to burn our bridges in relationship with people, but to be true and honest and make sure that our actions speak as much as our words do. Now, I can't finish a service without giving you an opportunity, if you are not in relationship with God, to be able to step into that. And we do this pretty well every Sunday. And you may say, like, I'm not sure if I'm serving one of the Trinity or some of the other, the evil Trinity of money, sex, and power, or some of the other things. I'm striving for all these things, and what you're saying intrigues me. What does it mean? How do I start following Jesus, who is the legitimate ruler of the world and can be the legitimate ruler of me, who loves me? It's as simple as ABC. That means it's not easy, because the life of following Jesus is not easy, but A stands for admit, acknowledge your need for him. I need God, because what I'm doing right now is not working for me. And the second thing is believe or trust that God has the life for me that is the best life I could live. And C, commit. That means you pull your allegiances away from all the other things and you give your allegiance to God and you start following his direction. We do have some text messages. Daniel, a great tattoo. Great to have you back. Yeah, okay. Gord, I dare you. Get that. I have a text this morning from Pastor Rob Good at Promise Church. And I wouldn't normally read this because he's not even here. He's busy working somewhere else. He said, from Promise Church, someone in our discussion just said, this passage is about the other 80,000. He stole our phrase. He said, well done. Thank you, Rob. That's all we got for text messages this morning. So let's stand. We're going to close in prayer. When the service is done, Theater 1, this becomes our prayer room. And our prayer focus this morning is to be prepared to listen for God's voice, to prepare ourselves for the opportunities to speak His words. We live in a world where people are watching and people are listening, and a lot of people are really jaded towards religion in general and sometimes Christianity in particular because they've seen and heard really bad things. So sometimes it's an uphill battle. It really is. Because people believe that God is up there scrutinizing and judging. Just like a kid with a magnifying glass standing over an anthill. And God is waiting for us to turn to Him so He can accept us and embrace. The world is watching and listening to see how we live out and communicate the message of Jesus. What's the writing on the wall in our culture? What is our prophetic response? What opportunities do you have this week to speak and communicate the love of Jesus to someone around you? Let's pray. Father, I thank You that You are a God who loves us, that You are a God who accepts us, but You are also a God who calls us into mission with You, which is a big challenge. We understand that it's too big for us, but You empower us with Your Spirit. We're not on our own. And so, Father, this week I ask that You would help each one of us to keep our ears open to Your Spirit. Keep our ears open and our eyes open to see and hear the opportunities that are in front of us. And Lord, I think probably most of us, myself included, have seen and heard those opportunities. We haven't had the guts to do anything. So give us the confidence and the boldness, not arrogance, but just the ability to present someone with that offer of love. Whether it's an explicit, you know, God has something better for you, can I pray for you, or an invite to church, or even the ABC explanation. A message of hope and a message of love. Help us see the opportunity and to take it. In Jesus' name, amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.